Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host. This episode is being posted on World Toilet Day, and this is an important day that's organized by the United Nations, really to call attention to the sanitation issues around the world. So for this episode, I wanted to have on Eleanor Allen. She is the CEO of Water for People. Eleanor, how are you doing?
I'm good, Travis. Thank you for inviting me to your Words on Water today.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our podcast episodes really focus on the developed world, and I'm hoping you can describe the challenges with water in the developing world a little bit. And I know before you'll do that, you'll correct me, because we talked before about this, about that terminology, developed world, developing world. What's correct?
Oh, yes. So correct is low, middle, and high income countries or economies. These are terminology. This is terminology from the World Bank. They came out with new guidance in 2016. And they update each year which countries fall in each of those classifications based on gross national income per capita. So it's we work in low and middle income economies.
I think that's good information for people to have. It's important to know the way, proper way to refer to these countries and the way that the United Nations is doing it. So what are really the challenges out there with water in the developing world? If you could kind of summarize that for our listeners.
Sure. So in Water for People, we work in three different regions. We work in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And while each country, in nine countries across those three regions, well, each country has its individual characteristics, cultures, and challenges in the world of water. One thing is the same, is that there's still not enough people that have quality water services. I would say the same for sanitation. So just, we don't say wastewater because the places where we're working do not have sewers. So we're on sanitation. So this is a change from most of my life, which was working with sewers and wastewater treatment plants. And it's still the same core material. It's just we're moving it not through sewers, but we're moving it through pumping out of pits or septic tanks and then moving it to treatment plants.
The reason that there's this lack of sanitation, a lack of access to safe drinking water, I know there's probably a number of challenges, but is it just the financial resources that country has available to offer that, or the understanding of the incredible importance to health and the economy and so forth? Or what are really kind of the challenges or the reasons, the obstacles, if you will?
Really interesting, Travis, because if you think about the work we're doing at Water for People, and it's not that we don't know how to solve this problem, and this problem would be get water to everyone so we don't have to think about it when we wake up like you and I don't. But that is unfortunately not the way that the world is working today. So we have the solution, but we still haven't solved the problem. And so to put it in the scale of where we are, it's 2.1 billion people who don't have access to safe water and 4.5 who don't have access to adequate sanitation. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot.
So we'll pause for effect there. A lot of people.
Yeah.
So why? Why do we have the status quo of people either walking to the creek or going to the bathroom out in the open? Well, it comes down to the difficulty of humans. We are the problem, our own problem. There's a lack of political will. There's a lack of financing, of course, but that the money's out there. It's just not directed to these areas. Governance structures and individual demand for services. So in some of the places where we work that has either they have open defecation or they have really pretty poor toilets, and it's you know, not what we would call properly managed sanitation. There's also lack of ability to self-organize to get the problem solved, and there's time available to live by the status quo. So we say the theory of the status quo is there's not enough impetus to change walking to the creek or going and open defecating until someone tells you you can use your time better elsewhere. elsewhere or in a different way, and there's a value to that time. And then you understand the implications to your health because you understand the connection between shit and bad health. And then you also value the time spent getting your kids educated or the time spent for a job. All those things sound relatively simple and common sense, are actually quite difficult. And then you, in our case, it is a service. So government has to come in and provide a driver or provide, allow an entry for market forces to create business opportunities to provide the services so people can enjoy the quality of life that we have.
One of the things I think is interesting is to talk about your niche out there, and your, and that's really your unique approach. There's a lot of water nonprofits out working in the low income and middle income countries. You hear about them and so forth, but I think it's your approach and the way you go in there and what you do, I think, that makes you Water for People so unique. So could you talk about that and what your approach is and how that sets you apart from maybe some of the other, especially big water nonprofits that people are familiar with?
Well, what sets Water for People apart are a couple unique characteristics. First of all, our model, our impact model, we call Everyone Forever. So in simple terms, it's about getting quality, lasting water and sanitation services to everyone in an area where we work forever. And if you break that down, it's about doing a master plan for an entire geography. We call it district, so we would call it a county in the U.S. Looking at that geography, seeing who has service that's good, who has service that's bad. Maybe oftentimes it's somebody well-intended from some other nonprofit who built something that broke and no one was there to maintain it. And then who has no service. And we work on a program that's typically 5 to 10 years to do a district to get services for everyone that are quality and lasting. So that means building infrastructure, but that also means building the institutions to keep that running. So we would call that the utility, the service authority plus the service provider. So the who has jurisdiction over those services, usually it's a municipality. They create a water and sanitation office. They hire operators and maintenance workers. We help set up all the structure. We train the operation and maintenance workers. We set up the supply chains for the spare parts. We help set the rates, really dependent on the cost of service of that service area. And we create water professionals where there were none, which is pretty amazing and awesome. And we also change the communities forever because they have the services that continue. And that's one of the big differentiators. So lasting services, that's dependent upon the second part of our model, is building the institutions in addition to the infrastructure. There are not many nonprofits that do that. And the second part that makes us unique is that we always require the municipality to co-finance the capital phase. So if we're going to build a water distribution system, part of that funding is coming from local government. And that is about globally about 35% of the funding. So it's quite a bit. Our annual budget is around $20 million. So a lot of money is coming. And that means they have ownership. They do get the assets, set up asset management programs. We transfer the assets during commissioning, and they own those assets. And by the time it's transferred and we go into the O&M phase, they really have the skills to do the operations. And we step into a more of a consultant role, and we're kind of on call as they transition to full operations. This includes monitoring data, making sure they meet the performance criteria for level of service, and then making sure they're collecting the revenue to do the repair and replacement. And then connection fees also for new users coming in.
I mean, you're basically building a utility. You're setting up utilities, yeah, in these countries, kind of from ground zero to full operation.
Yeah. And so if you can imagine the world where we work in 9 countries, we are working directly with, right now, our impact population. We just finished our metrics for annual monitoring for 2018. We ended our fiscal year in September. The big year for us, 3.3 million people now enjoy quality services. And this is counting since 2011 when we created the Everyone Forever model. So this is really exciting. I'm going to also pause for effect there.
Yeah, 3.3 million people that you've brought water to.
Oh. Yeah, so that is what we call our impact population. We're working towards 4 million by 2021 in our 9 countries.
Okay. Did you rattle off the 9 countries yet? That might be interesting for people to hear.
No, I can do that.
Yeah.
Latin America, we have 5. It's Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua in Central America, and Bolivia and Peru in South. In Africa, we're working in Uganda, Malawi, and Rwanda. India, we're working in, that's our only country in Asia, is India. We are working in the states of Bihar, West Bengal, and Maharashtra.
I'm wondering if you can kind of share a couple of impactful experiences you've had as CEO. I mean, you mentioned how the organization has brought water to 3.3 million people, and you've talked about these places, these countries where you work, and I can imagine, I can try to imagine what it's like for people to have no drinking water or no sanitation, and then to have suddenly have a utility set up. What's it been like? What are some of the human impacts that you've seen?
I'll set the stage a little bit. So I've been here a little over three years. And when I came in 2015, we've been doing the Everyone Forever model that I just described in our nine countries. And we were just adding additional districts as we were exiting districts. So I said, well, wow, this is amazing. We could actually do more. Why don't we see others to replicate the model so we can move faster? So we created a new strategy that was the district-wide approach I just described for Everyone Forever. And then we added two other levels, two strategic goals, global leadership and scale, in addition to Everyone Forever, which we call PROOF. One component of that is working at the national level. And then we are really advising national governments. So this one story that comes to mind is when I first went to Rwanda, which, by the way, was the country where we came up with Everyone Forever. But I was at the national government. So I was at the Ministry of Infrastructure, long table, you can picture, and I'm there, and I'm, you know, everyone's looking down the table at me and saying, oh, it's great to meet you. And we really believe in Everyone Forever. And matter of fact, we want to do it across all 30 districts in Rwanda. We want to get the whole country service using Everyone Forever model. Can you help us? Are you in? I'm like, definitely in. We estimated using some of the data we know from the joint monitoring program, $600 million to $1 billion for the infrastructure alone. Obviously out of scope for us, but hey, we can help make the plan. We actually are in a great position to make that plan because we know what it takes district by district. We know how to build the investment plan, the initial cost estimating. We know how to do the building blocks across, what you need for monitoring, what kind of people you will need in the ministry, which goes to the Ministry of Infrastructure, is delegated to the Water and Sanitation Corporation of Rwanda, is like the national utility. We'll help build these, help you build the rural utilities or the service authorities. So that's what we're doing. So we're working at the district level and the national level. And it's really strategic for us. And it's not a lot of investment for us because it's really leveraging our knowledge where we're actually doing the work. So we created an FU Uganda in Bolivia and Peru, because those are the countries where the presidents have full coverage, where they've actually all signed the Sustainable Development Goals, Sustainable Management of Water and Sanitation for All. But not all of those countries in the world, with 193 signed on, right? Not every president's like, yes, this is actually my top priority. But in these four countries for us, Rwanda, Uganda, Bolivia, and Peru, it actually is in the president's priority. So there you have the political will, which is one of those elements I mentioned earlier about getting, changing the status quo to actually getting, changing the system to make the services work. You need that political will. And in our case, to get a country there, you need the president. So we created this national program to work in these four countries. And then we can leverage our model, what we call indirect impact. We're not building the infrastructure, but we're doing the regulatory policy. We're advising on all these things, which is super exciting, strategic for us. So that's that story about just being in that room with the Ministry of Infrastructure, who's now the minister's become my friend, and I check in when I go there. But we are really helping advise across to these investment plans with the government for the 30 districts, what it takes to get each district there. So an initial and cost investment, people investment, what are the type of capacity building? Can't do this overnight. I totally believe Rwanda's going to get there and be the first member. I'm putting my bets on Rwanda.
There seems to be a strong link between Water for People and the Water Environment Federation community and many U.S. water professionals and companies. And I'm just wondering if that's accurate and how that developed and what the benefits are.
Yes, yeah, so that is accurate. And that is part of our legacy and our roots. We were founded in 1991. Our legacy, actually in the beginning days, it was all through member associations, and sections of AWWA, where we had committees, and we still do today, by the way, that were the fundraisers that sent hundreds of volunteers to go build. Now, when we did our retrospective way before my time, although I was a volunteer in those days, before I was CEO, in the early 2000s, we realized a lot of the things we built broke. We were in 40 countries doing little projects. A lot of water nonprofits still do this, by the way. Little project with volunteers, no one trained to do the O&M, and they fail. So we blew up our whole model, divested down from 40 to these 9 countries, and said, where can we do this at scale where we have the right government conditions? Again, that's part of the political will and desire to get full coverage. How can we continue to build our relationships with the sector? So today we still have over 50 volunteer committees, still do technical assignments that are beyond the ability of our engineers in country, because part of our sustainability model was hiring local professionals, and including technical professionals, and creating this new generation of professionals, which is amazing, and they are amazing. But we still shore up from here and really appreciate and have a lot of gratitude for our WEF roots in AWWA. And I've been a member of both. I've been a career member of WEF. Most of my career was in wastewater, so I really appreciate all the training I've in the business and being able to transfer those skills into the setting, which, by the way, is super complicated and complex, way more, so many stakeholders. It's not just one client at a time. It's lots of stakeholders, because we have the donors, we have the government, we have the service authorities, we have all of these different elements at play. But it is so amazing, Travis, when it works, and it is working, and it's worth all the effort and pain. And sometimes it's 2 steps forward and 1 step back. And but you see entire communities change, and really, like, the now in some of these communities that we've had gotten services since 2011 towards now, in our 3.3 million, the kids don't know any different, right? That's the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how they're going to grow up, and they have water, and they have a nice toilet, and they just can have a, you know, focus their energy on different things.
Oh, yeah, that's rewarding. So, as we talked about, this podcast episode is being released on World Toilet Day. It will live on past that, of course. But what are the ways that people can support your organization? Obviously, they can make financial donations. You can let people know how that works and what that goes to. But and then let us know other ways that people can support Water for People.
Yeah, I think there are 3 ways. Time, talent, and treasure. So time, either on the committees in one of the MA members, Water for People committees, and that's helping bring awareness to the global water and sanitation crisis and doing fundraisers for Water for People. So for talent, I would say World Water Corps. We do have probably 10 assignments a year. We have a whole mailing list. These are both actually on our webpage. You can see under volunteer, you can see World Water Corps and committees. And then also you can donate, of course. Webpage is always open for business. Every day is a fundraising day for me and for my colleagues. Some of these more complex things, which is really inspiring to me, is trying to bring business into nonprofit and create new ways of working. The future, and this is Eleanor's belief, by the way. So the future of where we're going has to be business oriented. And so we are looking, and one other part I haven't mentioned of our strategy of scale is national programs was the one I mentioned, but we say business approaches to sanitation. So finding jobs in sanitation. So these are, while government is co-financing water, we are building water systems. In sanitation, we're not building sewer systems. So it's about, you make a personal choice. Let's say you have a latrine or a septic tank. You have to call someone to empty it. Same is true here. So there's businesses for the people building toilets and bathrooms. Some of them are getting, you know, people are wanting nice places to go, of course. And I would want that too. So there's a business opportunity there. We're helping create those market forces to get new, nice toilet products to our countries. And these are businesses that are not ours. We're helping incubate them. The pit emptiers, so people don't dump their sludge and their, you know, it's gross, right? There's lots of contamination in storm channels and anywhere you can when no one's looking, which is anywhere you can in a lot of places. And then these little decentralized treatment plants, which we are building. So size for 50,000 people, small town size, we're building decentralized treatment plants. So creating this ecosystem that people the entrepreneurs will bring the sludge there and then reusing all the sludge. So mostly it's reused for soil amendments, compost, and also for cooking fuel. It's to compete with charcoal. We like to say how it compete charcoal. So there is a demand for these products. So definitely circular economy. We have like some people we're engaging as more strategic advisors to figure out how to, what are these intersections between business and nonprofit in this world of sanitation? 4.5 billion people, huge opportunity. And most of it is outside. All of this that I'm talking about is outside the US. So this is another area that's part of our scaling strategy that we're just discovering now. And it's super exciting. And no one's figured it out, by the way. Water is pretty easy compared to this stuff, right? So you gravitate to this profession one way or the other, and sometimes destiny, sometimes fate. But you know what? It's really intriguing and complex, and we have some nice solutions. Right now, we have 30 initiatives in sanitation. We're scaling 7, and it's an exciting phase for us.
Very busy times for you all, that's for sure. Well, I'm glad to just help you get this information out. I learned a tremendous amount about water for people through our conversations. I just think it's, again, so cool how you guys are building utilities, basically. It's a very different model than what you'll see with the other charities, although I know they all bring value and you work with some of the other big players as well. But Eleanor, thank you for the time and for the information.
Yeah, thanks, Travis. And if people want more information, our website is great. There's a strategy page there. There's a volunteer page. And of course, you can always reach out to me, and happy to tell you more about the exciting things at Water for People.
All right. Thank you so much.
Happy World Toilet Day. Woo!
Words on water.